Before the podcast starts, I just want to say that this podcast was recorded over a span of a month and a half. Sometimes I had a microphone, sometimes I did not. I've been very, very, very busy and just been trying to get as much done as I can. So the volume is not the best. The audio is not the best. But it's not really the point here. The point is to get this guy's face out there, get this story out there so we can get him behind bars where he belongs. Thanks for listening. Welcome to What Nightmares I'm Made Of. This is presented by Missing Person Cases Network, MPCN for short. And you can find us on Facebook at Missing Person Cases Network. Same with YouTube. Instagram, Missing_Persons_Network. And Twitter is the_MPC Network. And this is Wanted Monsters. And it'll be a series off of What Nightmares Are Made Of, which has gone in a few different routes. But that's mainly going to be serial killers and wanted and just really out there type of true crime. This first episode is very important, as I've had the task of putting something together for some time now. I've really looked into this case. This case bothers me, and it should bother you as well. And instead of naming it the wanted person's name, I'm going to actually try and say this is more about Alyssa Cannon and her son. And they were bludgeoned to death by a coward. A coward who was free. And he's been free for a while now, okay? And the sightings are far and few between. Yet there have been sightings. And there was a very credible one that was not followed up on fast enough. And he was able to up and leave. So, this needs to be shared worldwide because he is a fugitive. He is actually number 15 on the list of all of the United States. And I don't know why they are not putting more emphasis on it, as he is very, very dangerous. He bludgeoned to death Alyssa and her young son. Not his son, someone else's son, but he still bludgeoned him to death, okay? Blunt force trauma is really how they both died. And I'm going to go into a little bit of detail about that night. But what's really important are the events that progressed after he had already done this to them. He was very savvy about it, and he got himself a nice little head start. So, his name is Joy Wortham. And we're going to get into this episode in just a minute. There are just a few more things I need to add before I get deep into this episode. And that is, if you're listening now through Anchor, please share it. If you're watching on YouTube, please share it. Facebook, please share it. Please like and share. If you're on our YouTube, please subscribe and click the bell for awareness. Now, there's another podcast just about Jory. And that was done by a bail bondswoman who comes from the same town that this happened in. And she did that all on her own, and it's a great podcast, and I'm going to have a link of it wherever you're watching or listening to this, because I think it's essential that you listen to it, as most of my facts come from it. I've spoke with her and Alyssa's mother. I was supposed to actually do something much sooner, but unforeseen circumstances have pushed this back to now. I'm very sorry that it took so long, but we're getting it out there, and I hope that this push helps deliver the tip needed to apprehend this scumbag. With that being said, no tip is insignificant. What may be very little and minute to you may break the case. Do you know what you did or where you were on June 22nd of 2019? On Camden, Arkansas, it was a very, very, very hot day. Angela Cannon will never forget that day. That's the day that her world stopped. That's the day that Joey Worthen, a coward, woman beater, murdered her daughter Alyssa and her grandson Braden. Now, I'm going to tell you guys a few things on this episode that have not been told before. Unfortunately, I can't give my source of that information, so you can believe it if you want. I'll just let you know that it's a very, very, very credible source. So on that day, it was like any other. They had people over the house, they were barbecuing. And also, like always, Jory started drinking very, very early to the point where he was passed out. Now, it's been stated even by Jerry's mother that, you know, Alyssa kind of kept him in line with the drinking. You know, it's also been said that he does drugs as well. His mother says no, but who tells their mother that they do drugs, right? No one really. We know that for a fact that he does and did. He had a horrible drinking problem at just, I think he was like 20, 23 years old at the oldest. And he became violent, obviously. Now, let me first tell you that Alyssa had a restraining order against her. Up against him, I mean. And most restraining orders are just 3 years by default. This one was 10 years, okay? That's triple, right? And the events that took place will, you know, basically lead anyone to believe that this, that this guy did not have any issues abusing a woman. She had just gotten out of work at the hospital. For some reason, Jory was really obsessed with the fact that he wanted her to go pick up Braden from Braden's father. She didn't want to do it, so he goes to pick her up. And in the parking lot, he, you know, is whacking her with the open hand, shoving her into the car. And there was nurses outside that saw this. And during that hustle or tussle, his phone broke. And, you know, like the coward he is, he told Alyssa that she had to buy him a new one. And I'm sure he had a lot of other choice words. And I'm sure he was putting a lot of fear in her. That's what these abusers do. So he drives to Walmart so that she can buy him a phone. And while they were leaving, Alyssa said she had to go to the bathroom. And she slowed up. In doing so, she was able to alert work staff, and they locked her in the manager's office. During this time, police were called. Joy was flipping out. He was arrested. They were broken up for about 6 months after that. There was another incident involving Braden, where Joy basically put his hands on him. And now let me say, Braden is not Joy's child, so I think that also plays a role. Due to jealousy, I think he was very jealous of that, and that's just because of his trolling, his controlling demeanor. That's one point that Angela Cannon makes, is that, you know, she's so upset over the fact that she didn't do more to stop Alyssa from continuing to see him. And, you know, I've tried to explain it in as many ways as I can, that you have to understand the way it works with domestic violence. They have a hold over their victim's head. They just have this manipulation skill. And there's nothing you can really do. They have to decide themselves. Unfortunately, this had to happen. But what can be done about this is we can get Angela Cannon some closure and justice by sharing either this podcast, his wanted photo, whatever you have to do
to get the name out there, because he's a very, very dangerous person. Now, I'm going to go over some events, and that's the next thing I'm going to talk about. The events from when they left the party to when Alyssa and her son were found bludgeoned to death. Now I'm going to discuss the timeline. Saturday, June 22nd, Jory, Braden, and Alyssa went over to Angela Cannon, Alyssa's mother's house, for a barbecue. Like usual, Jory was drinking out of hand and ended up passing out. So when they were about to leave, Alyssa went and asked her mother if she could watch Braden the following day, Sunday, for a date night. She said, of course. 5 o'clock is when Braden was supposed to be dropped off. Like I said, they were arguing a little bit at the party. Family didn't really feel anything weird about it because they argued quite a bit. Now, these next two statements come from an inside source. I'm not sure if either is public, but number one, a neighbor did hear an argument. And number two, Alyssa's quote-unquote best friend, Sydney, was supposed to come over that day. And when questioned, Sydney said that she didn't go. That was one of her stories. The other story was that she went, she walked up to the door, heard an argument, and left. Now, it is alleged that Sydney and Jory had some type of affair or fling going on. Now, that's all speculation. But why else would you put someone walk away? So it is believed that Joy's mother thinks that she and the other guy that we'll talk about later, who helped hide Jory, are the ones that killed them, which is it's completely preposterous, makes no sense. Let me get back to the timeline. The next day rolls around, 5 o'clock passes. Angela gets worried. She calls Alyssa into what she receives a message back. In that message, she said that Jory's father came and picked them up and took them to Texarkana so they could go to the mall. And they were sleeping over at a hotel, which didn't make much sense because it was close enough to come back, and that's not what their plans were. So the next day comes around, which would be Monday. And she's starting to get more and more worried. So she drives by Alyssa's home and notices her car is not there, which is very alarming because it was stated in the text message that Jory's dad came and picked them up. So where's her car? She immediately drove to Jory's dad's house to see what was going on. And when she got there, Jory's dad's wife came to the door and said, no. He's been in the house sick all weekend. That is when things went into overdrive. Alyssa's mother really started to freak out here when they went to the police. So that day, the 25th, when they made the report, they started to look into what was going on, looked into Joy's background, and found the domestic violence issue, where there was a 10-year no contact. So they were really worried. They sent cops to the house to do a welfare check. Now, some of this information is going to be graphic. I want to warn you now. The doors were not unlocked, so they had to find a way to get into the home. They went over to a window, in which a cop peeked in and saw one of their bodies. Eventually, they did go into the home, and when they went into the home, what they found was horrific. To say the least, described as blood everywhere. They went into Alyssa's room, blood. They then went to Braden's room where they found Braden and Alyssa, both murdered. Alyssa due to strangulation, while poor Braden was beat to death, blunt trauma, and his official cause of death was a brain bleed. These were brutal murders of rage. There was a note left. And on that note, Jory says that Basically, he killed them, and then now he's going to kill himself. That was something he often said, but he was going to kill himself and kill them. But this time, it looks like he went through with it. So, Alyssa's car is still missing. His car is outside. Now, the police are not releasing all the information and evidence, but they know for a fact he did this, and all they've really told us about is the letter. But when I watched The Pursuit by John Walsh, I got a little bit more information that maybe some people missed, and that was that there was actual physical evidence throughout the house that it was Jory.
So I first found out about this case when I was doing the state-by-state missing persons coverage that I was doing, where I went around the whole country alphabetically. And when I went over Arkansas, I found out about this case. And I found out that he was wanted. And this was, it had to be November-ish. And the crime happened in the summer of last year. And I would have thought that definitely he would have been found by now. Over a year later, and he's still not found. And what has bothered me the most is the little amount of awareness to this. I'll see other people being wanted and having national headlines. And I feel like this is one of those cases that need that type of headline because he is dangerous. He killed two people with his hands, pretty much. You know, no gun, no knife, no weaponry. Maybe an object, but still, that's very gruesome. Calculated, and was most likely done in a drunken rage. Alyssa had a order of protection against him. But Alyssa was the type of person who believed in love. And sometimes people can really be manipulated by their abuser. Well, not sometimes, all the time. The other case I'm working on with the family, Jessica Van Zandt Dietzel, her husband subjected her to domestic violence for a very long time, to extents that I have not seen publicly as to what he did to her, as far as the bashing, name-calling, childish behavior. What happens is these victims want to leave, but they don't feel like they can oftentimes, or they think that the perpetrator is going to change. Very seldom, almost never, there's a man who puts his hands on a woman. Well, I like to call him a man, I guess. Do they change? Once you hit a woman once, I feel like that's probably something that you weren't taught right, or you just have no respect, and because they can usually continuously do it. There's not many people that I hate more than those men who hit women and belittle them. She wanted to see the good in him, okay? She was allowing her son to get close to him. She wanted, she just wanted to see the good in him. And unfortunately, her and her family have now had to pay the ultimate price with her life, as well as her son's life. And, you could say, well, why did she go back? Well, like I just said, it's like almost, it's some type of syndrome where these bad, I believe it's called battered woman syndrome, and they don't know. They just want to believe in that person. You wouldn't be able to really understand it unless you spoke with a victim. And the day this happened was basically like any other. Jory had been in the army. He went to boot camp, but whether or not he was honorably or dishonorably discharged is still up in the air and not important at all for this episode. What is important is that I'm not going to be saying that he didn't do this. So Jay for Justice had picked this up around when it first happened, and she ended up giving Alyssa's mother and Jory's mother an episode. Alyssa's mother, of course, wanted to come on live and be asked questions. Jory's mother just made some statements through Jay, didn't answer any questions, trying to basically say her son is dead too. And we know that's impossible, because somebody else actually was arrested for aiding and abetting him when they met him in the woods and gave him money. And we're going to get into the little details of that day. We're going to get into who did that and why. And why we know that Jory is the one who committed this horrendous crime. And how anybody that can say he didn't is just delusional. Before I get into the specifics of this case, there's something I really want to point out. And that's that Joy Wortham is really the only person who could have done this. I'm not putting any doubt in it. I know that if you go and you put his name into YouTube, you'll come up with a J for Justice video. That's a bunch of bull crap. That are basically statements from his mother. But if his mother really believed that he was innocent, why wouldn't she go on there live and take questions and handle questions and converse with people? Why just make statements, not even give your name, and not go on there? I know Alyssa's mother, Angela, she wanted to go on there. I believe that she did. I haven't heard that one yet. As I spoke to her myself, so I had all my questions answered from her. But basically what Jory's mother was trying to say was trying to put it on these other people. And it just makes no sense. We know that Jory met up with Moniz because Moniz was charged and he made a plea deal. And it was Moniz giving Jory money, not the other way around. She had this cockamamie story about the girl purchasing ecstasy for Jory, and you kill Alyssa and a little baby? What? It just doesn't make any sense. No one else has the motive. There was a letter, a note, you know, professing that he did it and that he was going to kill himself. But, you know, just like the marshals believe, many other authorities, if you're going to do a murder-suicide, which is what he would have done, you do it right then and there. Once you have time to think, you're not going to kill yourself. I know, I'm sure that people wish that he had killed himself, but he didn't, and he's definitely getting help. She says that he didn't have the means to do this, but he's doing it, so he clearly has the means. Tracy, who did the Joy Wortham, the Hunt for Joy Wortham podcast, you know, states that she's never seen, like, she's been a bail bondswoman for many years, and she's never seen anything like this. So, don't let that fool you. He had the resources because it's going on. You know, there was a very credible tip. I'm not going to say where it said that he was, but he was there because the person who called in the tip talked about the tattoo specifically on his forearm. And it's a very specific tattoo. So we know Joy Wortham did this. He is now number 15 on the U.S. Marshals list of most wanted fugitives. They don't just put anyone on there, someone that's suspected of doing something. Okay? You have to have significant evidence that this person did this. Okay? It's a fact. I understand that that's Joy's mother and she's going to go stick up for him no matter what, and I get that. But don't try to throw other people under the bus for trying to badmouth Alyssa or her child. Alyssa nor her child deserve to die, okay? And the way they died. I know for a long time there, they weren't really talking about the means in which they died, but it was very brutal. It was blunt force trauma. That's horrible. And Alyssa's mother is really going through it. I mean, we just went through the 1 year. I don't like to call it an anniversary, more of a memorial. And she's struggling, and I don't blame her. Her daughter's gone. Her grandson is gone. the never coming back, and Jory is still breathing air. She's having a hard time with that, and I completely understand. That's why I'm trying to get this out there to everyone. Most people don't even, that follow true crime, don't even know that this coward is even wanted. Most people may have seen him and they have no idea that this person is wanted for killing a 20-year-old girl and her 4-year-old son. So now I'm against more of the details, and then we'll go from there.
Now, I did state that Liz's friend Sydney was someone who has changed her story, right? And what type of people change their story? Guilty people, but what is she guilty of? Now, like I said, I had that information from a very credible source that Jory and her were actually, you know, messing around. And it's possible that, you know, who really knows? I'm not going to get into too much theorizing here because, you know, I want to try to stick to the facts. And, you know, it really makes me think, you know, what could have brought somebody like this over the edge? What could have actually brought them over the edge? Now, Jory's mother claims that he was not like this, as other people say that too. But he had an issue with both drugs and alcohol. As far as drugs, it was meth and ecstasy. Combine that with alcohol and you have a very dangerous person. Now, it is also alleged, now from this, another very credible source, that the reason, because you have to think, what would be the reason for this, okay? Just a small argument, that's nothing. Saying she's going to leave him, I'm sure that's been happening many times. Supposedly, Alyssa actually found some very compromising photos on Jory's phone. These compromising photos were, it wasn't with another woman. It wouldn't have brought it to this. It was with a younger male. And I can't really speak much more on it, but basically this male was definitely under the age of 18. Now, the police have not been able to locate his phone either, which is really, really troubling. Really troubling, because that is something that could have brought him to that type of age. Because of the, like, you know, the macho ego he tried to portray. What would it have done if they found that out? It's really sad, and no reason for this to happen. And that brings me now to her car. Her car was found 2 weeks later in Seattle, Washington, on the other side of the country. How did it get there? Definitely not driven, because when they found the car, it was in a Burger King parking lot, and it had no plates on it. Now, was he using a different plate, and did he drive? Now, I doubt it, because there are license plate readers all over this country. Many of you may not even know about them, but they're being used more and more to solve crimes. I know for a fact the two they were used on. One of them was the most recent Lila Cavett case, where they have license plate readers for Shannon Ryan's car. That's how they know where he was. The other case was the case of Heidi Broussard, and what they did was they tracked her killer's license plate. And they knew exactly where it was. And also the woman who stole the baby. So how did the car get there? Was it transported? I mean, to have that much knowledge or ability to make a car go from Arkansas to Seattle, Washington, that's being looked for it not to be found, was it? You know, you have to have some type of power. You have to know people to make that happen. Now, Jory's mom states that he doesn't have those type of connections. Okay, but if he did have those type of connections, would you tell people? Another point I want to bring up. 2 days, he had a 2-day at least head start. 2 days. I personally believe that, you know, the family knows a lot more, because they will not talk. They will not answer questions. They'll give statements and that's it. Tracy, the bondswoman, she was talking with the dad, the dad's wife, and the grandmother came out and shut that down. These people are afraid to talk. Not afraid to talk, they're not talking for a reason. I think that he definitely has the connections to do this because he's doing it. So there's a few different articles on a few different places that he may be. Georgia, Alaska, Canada. But there was a really credible tip after In Pursuit that I don't think I can speak about, but it wasn't acted upon quick enough. And he was gone. And even with that tip, the tipster said he had the Matthew 7:6 tattoo on his forearm before it was released. To me, that's very, 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 very credible. This next information may be some of the most critical for the whole case. I'm going to read a news story. On July 31st of 2019, one man has been arrested in connection to the double homicide of Alyssa Cannon and Brandon Ponder. According to the Camden Police Department, investigators received an anonymous tip that led them to one Montez Charles Xavier Woods. Over the course of 2 days and several investigations, police learned that Woods had met with the suspected murderer, Joey Worthen, outside of Chidester on June 27th of 2019. That would have been 5 days after the last day that they were seen, that Alyssa was seen. It would have been 2 days after the murders. And they found evidence that Woods knew of the murders and knew where Worthen was. He was arrested on July 24th, charged with hindering apprehension of prosecution. His bond was set at $100,000. Now you think, oh, this is great. You know, they're going to find out what happened. So Woods sat in jail for 7 months and took a plea. The plea he took got him just 5 years probation, no jail time. Supposedly he gave Jory $400 cash, which is supposedly for a drug deal, and a weapon, and he was hiding in the woods. Now, I believe that during those first 2 days that Jory did meet with his mother or father, most likely his mother, and let her know what was going on, and they figured out a plan where he would still be able to get money and be able to do this. Because if you think about it, those 2 days, no one was looking for Jory. They don't know where he was or where he went. How would they know if he had gone to his mother's house? They weren't even looking for him. They wouldn't know. It's a very big possibility. And just the way that she explains things is very, very sketchy. And you just know that she knows more. If you want to go and watch the Jay for Justice podcast where she gives a statement, go right ahead. But I don't think anything that she says should be taken into context in this case. She doesn't really know who her son was, obviously. Now, it's also stated that the jury gets that rage from her side of the family, as it was an incident that Jory described to somebody about her almost murdering his little sister. There's a lot of messed up stuff going on with this case, let me tell you. She also states that Montez Woods was more Alyssa's brother's friend than Jory, but obviously not if this took place. This is terrible. You don't help a fugitive who did something like this, murdered a mother and a child. What is wrong with you?
There's actually an issue I'd like to circle back around to that I would like to just discuss, get some opinions on it. We found out that Alyssa was found in Braden's room. Now, there was blood all over the house. I'm not sure. So we don't know if he has defensive wounds, but I imagine he had quite a few defensive wounds. And what I believe happened is basically he was once again, we know he has physically harmed Braden before. He has no problem abusing kids.
women or kids. I think that he was very, very drunk. He was probably, you know, going on and on about Alyssa's baby dad. He's obviously very jealous. It could have been something very minute that just his rage could have, you know, gotten out of control. And meth, crystal meth is known for rage, real rage. And it's not speculated. It's pretty much a proven fact that he has done crystal meth. I don't know if he was an addict for it, but I know that he had a real issue with ecstasy. And around that, I mean, Molly, basically it's Molly. That's all over the streets now. It's not like it used to be. I think that she was going to protect him. And he basically raged out of control. And I think that it all was all over his jealousy. And started with Brayden. And that poor little boy didn't do anything wrong. This is just such a bad, such a sad, sad situation. And I have a lot of other speculation I've been leaning towards. And that's about the friend. She claimed to be her best friend. She walked to the door, heard a commotion, and left. And that's her story. We don't know if that's true. Why would she just leave? Was she threatened? Why wouldn't you tell what you heard? You know, how powerful are these people? Or is it that she's not scared and that something else is going on? It's very possible. Who knows? They could be having a secret relationship. We don't know. Nothing is off the table at this point.
This next segment is going to be more about teaching exactly why these victims stay. And maybe it will give you a better understanding of what was going on in that household, okay? So, when it is a viable option, it is best for victims to do what they can to escape their abuser. However, this is not the case in all situations. Abusers repeatedly go to extremes to prevent the victim from leaving. In fact, leaving an abuser is the most dangerous time for a victim of domestic violence. One study found in interviews with men who have killed their wives that either threats of separation by their partner or actual separations were most often the precipitating events that led to the murder. A victim's reason for staying with their abuser are extremely complex and in most cases are based on the reality that their abuser will follow through with the threats they have used to keep them trapped. The abuser will hurt or kill them. They will hurt or kill the kids. They will win custody of the children. They will harm or kill pets or others. They will ruin their victim financially. The list goes on and on. The victim in violent relationships knows their abuser best and fully knows the extent to which they will go to make sure they have and can maintain control over the victim. The victim literally may not be able to safely escape or protect those they love. A recent study of intimate partners homicides found 20% of homicide victims were not the domestic violence victims themselves, but family members, friends, neighbors, persons who intervened, law enforcement responders, or bystanders. So there are additional barriers to escaping a violent relationship, and they include but are not limited to the fear that abuser's actions become more violent and more lethal if the victim attempts to leave, unsupportive family and friends, knowledge of the difficulties of single parenting and reduced financial circumstances, the victim feeling that the relationship is a mix of good times, love, and hope, along with the manipulation, intimidation, and fear, the victim's lack of knowledge of or access to safety and support, fear of losing custody of any children if they leave or divorce their abuser, or fear the abuser will hurt or even kill their children, lack of means to support themselves and or children financially, or lack of access to cash, bank accounts, or assets.
lack of having somewhere to go, fear that homelessness may be their only option if they leave, religious or cultural beliefs and practices may not be supportive of divorce or may dictate outdated gender roles and keep the victim trapped in the relationship. Belief that the two-parent household are better for children despite abuse. Now, I'm not going to get too deep into this, but the first part that I read is the most important in this case. I do believe that Alyssa was going to finally leave Jory. She had left him for 6 months in the past from a domestic dispute. I do believe this played a huge role in what took place that day. What exactly transpired, we'll never know. We just know that it was brutal. So brutal. And he needs to be caught and brought to justice so Alyssa and Braden's family can finally grieve. And in ending, there's one last thing I want to bring up, and that's one of his tattoos, the Matthew 7:6. And I'm not going to interpret this verse for you personally. I ask that you go and read it. It is considered the most controversial verse in the entire Bible. And it's because it can be interpreted in so many different ways. Most people look at it as an evil verse, basically saying not to let evil get in the way, not to let material things get in the way of doing good, basically. That's how I interpreted it. But it is considered the most controversial Bible verse. You know, when someone gets a tattoo, you know, I have quite a few tattoos, a lot of thought goes into that process. You know, I'm not going to try and get inside his head, but I know there's an ulterior motive to that. So if any of his friends or anyone that knew him knows exactly why he got that tattoo, because I'm sure he's told someone, if you could please reach out and let me know. I'm pretty curious about that. Hope you enjoyed. Please share this or his wanted face. Let's get this this case out there. Let's get Angela Cannon some closure so she can finally grieve.